Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to A Good Football Show. I am Patrick Darty, joined today by Mr. Denny Carter. We're going to take a spin through the latest NFL news, including Jerick McKinnon's return to Kansas City and the increasing chatter that Josh Jacobs could have his role scaled back in Vegas. We're also going to check in on Tony Pollard and Saquon Barkley receiving season and debate potential landing spots for Terry McLaurin. I don't know if we're actually going to do that or not. I mean, he's not going to get traded.
We'll see if we get around to it.
Before welcoming in and bearing the lead, Mr. Lawrence Jackson, for a series of what I've deemed pointless debates. They are inspired by my Twitter poll the other day of who would you rather start in 2022, Drew Locke or Sam Darnold. So we're going to have ourselves a few pointless debates.
All right.
Here on June 14th, and boy, are they pointless. We're talking real, real pointless. But first, Denny, I've been doing a lot of airport traveling recently. And I've been hearing, you know, a lot of like ambient, basically, you know, the kind of music they play in like airports and grocery stores. And in both Lambert Field and Hartsfield Jackson, Lambert Field being in St. Louis, Hartsfield Jackson being in Atlanta last week, I was connecting to Birmingham. I heard Weezer's Island in the Sun. Heard it in the same day in two different airports. And I'm like, this has become one of like the quintessential Muzak airport grocery store songs. I was wondering, what comes to mind for you when you think like grocery store Muzak? What do you think is like a signature Muzak song?
You know, speaking of that song was very popular when I was a senior in high school.
And it was huge. Well, I mean, Weezer was like the biggest band in the history of the St. Louis suburbs.
Oh, okay.
And, like when they returned, because you know, it was between 96 and 2001, they went without albums. And like, that's like an eternity in a teenager's life. When they came back in 2001, it was huge. Essentially like, I mean, no offense to Jesus, but it was basically like Jesus came back. And like one of the biggest events in the history of my suburb.
Let's not get religious in this talk about Weezer. But yeah, I think that was the Green Album, correct?
It was the Green Album, the second self-titled album in 3 years. They've since gone on to produce 42 self-titled albums of color.
And they here's the thing about those. They've all been bad.
They've all been hellaciously bad.
Yes. And miserable.
Rivers Cuomo seems to be like, I think maybe conducting a CIA experiment to see like what fan bases will put up with, like once they've become hardcore. Like, well, I mean, surely it's gonna be the one that finally breaks the back of this fan base.
But no,
never does.
Every time I hear them, I'm like, who's this new boy band playing on the radio, the local radio? Say, oh, it's Weezer.
Is it who it's hired horrible. An AI to write a Christmas song that they're releasing in July for some reason?
the CIA thing is actually spot on, I think. Okay, well, I don't have one that like jumps to mind, but I will say that this is, you know, spans generations here, that this sense of like pop music and like cool music becoming Muzak, because my dad has told me too many times about the time he got into an elevator sometime in like the mid to late 80s and he heard Jimi Hendrix's Purple Haze playing. And he thought, well, this, you know, when this came out and when he was a teenager, this was literally the devil's music.
Like transgressive.
Yeah. Like satanic cult music. What this was it. And now it's playing in the elevator of an office building in suburban Maryland. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I thought it was weird when I was in a Wells Fargo lobby and I heard Nirvana's Territorial Pissings.
Stop.
You know, like, man, things have changed so quickly.
Oh, man, yeah, yeah. But no, it is amazing, though. Lots of Elton John and Billy Joel.
God. You know. Can we talk about Billy Joel for a second?
Sure.
I'm sorry, but... he's the worst artist who's ever lived.
Oh,
like, not even close. Like, okay. Not even debatable.
I'm supposed to hate him. My persona, like my idea that nothing is cool and everything is bad. I like Billy Joel. If Billy
this
Joel
actually comes, is cancelable offense.
No, listen, if Billy Joel comes on in the car, that's the only time I will tell everyone in the car, you all need to shut up for 5 minutes while I sing along to this Billy Joel song. I grew up on Billy Joel. It's stuck in my brain, and I will never forsake Billy.
I like the songs where he does like the slightly like clipped, like punkier style. So not that punk would ever be like, it's still rock and roll. Back, Jack, scratch, cat, back, cat, yeah, right. But it's still rock and roll to me.
Oh, I love that song. God.
It's horrible, but it's better than some of his other songs.
No, I didn't like, I don't like his 80s thing where he was doing like doo-wop from the 50s. That's not my deal. But before that, it was good.
But I think the quintessential grocery store song is Dire Straits' Walk of Life.
Oh my gosh.
And if you want a song written in the 21st century, it's probably something like Rihanna, like, We Found Love in a Hopeless Place, song, I think, featuring Calvin Harris.
Well, that Dire Straits song is actually good, though.
Yeah, I mean, that one's amazing. You got to give him props for that one.
Right.
Here come Johnny singing.
I want you to sing the whole thing. All right, ready? We're going to start from the beginning. Producer Adam, play the track.
Oh, dear. I was taking a drink of coffee.
Sorry.
You want to hear a really embarrassing pandemic story? It was a... pretty late at night in the grocery store, I was masked up, as one does during viral global outbreaks of, like, you know, like a SARS type virus. And Walk of Life by Dire Straits did come on, and I was singing it out loud through my mask. And then, of course, I came in like an aisle with someone else. But I was like, you know, maybe they didn't know it was me because I got my mask on.
Tell me if this is the case. I know what you're saying, but about having the mask and having some, you know, ability to speak without others acknowledging it or hearing it, seeing your mouth move, looking crazy. But I tend to curse to myself in the grocery store because no one can see me. So I'll go into an aisle where I think the baked beans are and they won't be there. And I'll say 15 curse words under my mask, but I would never do that without the mask.
No, it's just so weird you mention that because I've done the exact same thing. Am I like you ever think about moving? Like someone who's been, you know, just like has totally every right to be in that spot. And, you know, like this is, I'm like whispering because I don't want them to hear. But yeah, I noticed that too. Like definitely an increase in cursing because, you know, you can't see it. You can't read my lips.
And right. You can't read my lips looking like I just gave up a home run in the first inning.
The one that just called you. You know, every curse. It was this other guy, this Kane over here. I mean,
right.
Well, he's not wearing a mask, so you can.
It's similar to when a pitcher puts his glove over his mouth,
yeah.
and his nose, and you know that he's cursing a blue streak, as the boomers would say. He's cursing so much. I mean, it's unspeakable what he's saying, and that's the same with me when I can't find the damn beans.
Yeah, that's one thing I'll miss about masks. Well, I'll be honest too. I've actually stopped masking even in the grocery store. It's kind of a losing battle. I'm still masking on the plane, by the way. Like, I'm very judgmental about masking on the plane. Like I got sick. Like, do you guys want colds? Like, it doesn't have anything to do with cold. Like, to me, it's like a practice we should keep. Like, I kind of fly kind of a lot. And I'm like, I don't know about you, but like, yeah, I don't really feel like coughing for a week again after this flight for no reason. And I welcome the masks on the plane.
Listen, well before COVID. Okay, I got sick after literally every flight.
That's not just you, that's the entire country.
And I remember thinking, like, I have to build into my schedule the fact that I will not be feeling well 48 hours for 48 hours after this flight.
Now, don't get me wrong, I take the mask off for the entire 25 minutes of having my Bischoff cookies and coffee, but I mean, you can't get sick then. Everyone knows that. So,
no, of course.
Anyways. Denny, the Raiders declined Josh Jacobs' fifth-year team option on April 29th then drafted his early down successor, Zamir White, literally one day later. Raiders beat writers have been increasingly vehement in their reports that Jacobs' role could be scaled back this season. Denny, are we even going to get early down Jacobs' value under new coach Josh McDaniels in the desert this season? Or are we like already past the beginning of the end with Josh Jacobs? And is there any point where this man becomes like a value in drafts? He's currently the RB22 in underdog.
I mean, I would think that there is a spot, I think, for every player where they become appealing. And I would also think that Josh Jacobs has a good path, like a foreseeable path to most of the early down work to start the season. I don't see him being supplanted right away. Now, the fact that he's not an explosive runner, like he hardly ever rips off long runs. I think he had two runs last year of more than 20 yards. And remember, this is a guy who for the final 6 or 7 weeks of the season was like the bell cow for Vegas.
But those runs were probably against the Chargers, by the way.
Right. And you know, so he's never shown anything. New coaching staff, even John Gruden, who you know, supposedly loved the guy and always talked up, you know, him as a bell cow and giving him all the touches and all the targets and everything. Even John Gruden couldn't find a way to really utilize him in that fashion. So I'm not drafting him at ADP. I think Zamir White as like a very late round bench stash is way more appealing. You know, beat writers have talked about how Zamir White really fits in with Josh McDaniels' running scheme, which is like no frills, simple stuff, up the middle, up the gut, and Zamir White does that well.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of one of those situations where, like, the team itself and like the Raiders media is basically they're especially the team, you know, kind of trying to be polite about it. They're not like coming out and like trashing Josh Jacobs, obviously, but kind of in so many words saying like, yeah, like this is for real. Like we're moving on from Josh Jacobs after the season. We don't really know what his role is going to be this season. And, you know, part of the reason Josh Jacobs doesn't rip explosive runs is because he's always like playing through some injury. It's like, that's both good and bad that he like stays on the field. Like he plays hurt, but yeah, it totally limits his long run last year was 28 yards. Mm-hmm. And it was, of course, against the Chargers. And
there you go.
In week 18, he had a long run of 28. So he went 17 weeks of the season where his long run was 21 yards.
Yeah.
On Thanksgiving, it's the Cowboys as one does.
Yeah. He gets, I mean, if you look at, you know, like next gen stats and everything, like everything about his advanced stats says that Josh Jacobs is a guy who will get what is blocked and nothing more. And I think Zamir White can be better than that if slightly. And that's good. That's fine if you're taking him in like the 15th round.
We know how crude yards per catch is, like totally kind of pointless stat. But so like we've always wanted like a little more Josh Jacobs receiving usage. Only had 20 catches as a rookie. He averaged 8.3 yards per catch. That did go up to 33 as a sophomore. And then it dropped to 7.2 yards per catch. Last year, he eclipses 50. Catches 54 balls and 6.4 yards per catch. And generally, you want a running back to be around 8.0. It's kind of the cutoff for like a solid, like if this running back is like actually worth his targets, it's kind of 8.0. And his like efficiency coming down as his usage increases as a runner too.
Right.
Yeah, it just seems like he's been trending in the wrong direction. We know Josh McDaniels likes the committees. They've literally drafted his replacement.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Josh McDaniels loves third down back. I mean, there's no way like Josh Jacobs is going to catch over 50 balls again. I feel like
no way. With Kenyon Drake back and everything, no, that's not. Yeah, the thing, yeah, we might just be overlooking that part of it where it's like they got his replacement, and that's usually a red flag.
Yeah, that's usually a red flag when they draft your replacement. So not a good sign, and I'm kind of surprised like the sharp drafters on underdog are making him the RB22.
Wow, that seems like, bullish.
Yeah, it seems very, very bullish. And, you know, that's a sharp group, like we said. So
it is.
But, yeah, I think that'll come down. And Josh Jacobs is just going to be trending in the wrong direction all summer, Denny. Friend of the show, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, recently received more bad news when the Chiefs re-signed passing down back Jerick McKinnon. McKinnon, of course, ended up usurping CEH for some of the most important touches of the year during the playoffs last season. Denny, do you think McKinnon's return is kind of like about just insurance or about the Chiefs like seemingly continued like like CEH, I don't even know what you'd call it, like replacement plan, slowly replace everything he does with other backs. Like, is there any positive way to spin Jerick McKinnon's return to Kansas City for CEH or no?
There is not. And I say this as a big fan of CEH, who was very nice to us at the Super Bowl. You know, McKinnon has some red flags. He has the injury history. He's entering his age 30 season. So, you know, you're not drafting him as a guy who's going to see, you know, even 12 or 15 touches a game or anything close to that. But he was really effective as a pass catcher in, you know, what became like a short check down KC offense last year when they had to make that shift in offensive philosophy. And he saw 48 touches in three postseason games for Kansas City. He was by far their most effective back in any way you want to measure it. So I'm excited about getting, I've been wondering what's taking so long. I've Googled Jerick McKinnon for 2 months thinking like, is there something wrong here? Like, are other teams courting him or what? No. The answer was no. He finally comes back. I think that, you know, he's worth some serious consideration. And I think he completely blows up Edwards-Helaire's prospects.
Yeah, it's a bad sign. I was like you too. I was wondering why, like, what was taking so long. It was probably like the Chiefs just like refusing to give him like $50,000 more or something. Like, they finally broke his back over $50K or whatever. And like Jerick McKinnon, it's like, I feel like it's the classic. Like, I don't think he can really create value of his own because a guy who's, you know, almost literally never stayed healthy, but I think he really can cripple CEH's value. And I guess value, of course, would be very relative term with Jerick McKinnon because he's going to be like a late round freebie, maybe even just a waiver wire guy in redraft, like a final two round pick in best ball. Mm-hmm. And like, there's zero downside there. And yeah, I said, like, it's going to be more about like the value he takes from CEH, but yeah, he will create enough value, I feel like, to be worth late round freebies for sure.
Yeah.
And it just seems like the Chiefs, like, if you're a CEH partisan, you know, seeing like the guy who played better than CEH in the most important games of the year re-signed in June, yeah, there is no real positive way to spend that.
It, you know, the Zoomers won't remember this, but Jerick McKinnon, before all the injuries and before he vanished from the scene for, I don't know, what was it, 3 years, was generational? I mean, was like I'm talking about...
You better believe it.
As a prospect, you know, like off the charts in every measure, in every measurable way. And his production when given touches, you know, in Minnesota was unbelievable. And, you know, so he's finally like seeing some of this come to fruition. And you had to feel good for him last year when he emerged like he did. And I remember being very confident in, like, let's say playing him in DFS in the postseason because he was running so many routes. And I think the team, you know, the team has to recognize how good he was, how effective he was as a pass catcher.
Yeah, I'm sure there are people who drafted Jerick McKinnon as an inaugural rookie draft in 2014 and have kept him this entire time in their dynasty leagues because he is one of like the ultimate dynasty league dead enders. Like, no matter what, like, you don't give up on Jerick McKinnon. And yeah, this is his best situation in like a while because he arrived in Kansas City kind of mid season last year.
Yeah.
And his usage didn't really pick up at all till the end of the season. I mean, he looked totally dead legged in 2020 with the 49ers. I'll say
he did,
but he looked a little
said it. Remember Shanahan was like, he can't handle this workload. So we're giving it to Jeff Wilson.
Yeah, that's right. And one of the most concerning things about CEH, by the way, isn't necessarily that he hasn't taken the next step forward on early downs. Like, we kind of never necessarily expected that. I mean, some people did, but I was like, wow, he's going to have to prove he can actually operate an early down. It is kind of more the way he's remained stuck in neutral as a pass catcher is what's really like hampering CEH in fantasy and real life. And like, as this next step forward, and like, yeah, this isn't again, where the Raiders are kind of speaking actions louder than words, this is definitely like a very loud action from the Chiefs when it comes to CEH.
One more thing about McKinnon or CEH or whoever gets that primary pass catching role out of the backfield. You know, Andy Reid, in case you missed it, is really good at designing screens and getting running backs involved in the offense, putting them in good position to succeed. So, who, you know, we have to really keep an eye on that and pay attention to beat writers and what they're saying during Kansas City's training camp for sure.
Yeah, the Chiefs backfield is going to be a really, really fascinating one during training camp because Ronald Jones does not have like early downs like salted away like at all.
No.
He's going to have to prove to an entirely new coaching staff that his reputation does not precede him.
Yeah.
And then he can actually pick up the blitz occasionally. He can actually not fumble occasionally. And I wouldn't be surprised if the Chiefs are not done adding to this backfield. And so it will be one of the backfields to watch this summer. Tony Pollard has joined the cavalcade of running backs, supposedly spending more time in the slot of late, Denny. Pollard, of course, was already a featured pass catcher for the Cowboys, but do we think he can take a meaningful step forward? He caught a career-high 39 passes last season. Can he maybe get that up to over 50 in a skill core where there's kind of some targets for the taking? Or is Tony Pollard just kind of like the classic in the Duke Johnson zone? His role's already maxed out.
Yeah.
Is there actually a next step to take for Tony Pollard, Denny?
The only next step is if Ezekiel Elliott misses time or if the
team. Which he never ever does.
And he never will.
He's always hurt, but he never misses time.
He's Josh invincible. Jr. He has to be the toughest player in NFL history. I don't think Pollard has anywhere to go except for Ezekiel Elliott missing time or if the team perhaps pulls the plug. I don't know. I mean, if Zeke is again underwhelming and underperforming again for the third straight year, maybe McCarthy says, okay, like we can't do this again. And but you can't bank on that, especially if you look at how much they're paying him. And especially if you look at what Jerry Jones says about him, he talks about Ezekiel Elliott like he's still a 22-year-old rookie, ready to run for 2,000 yards as the centerpiece of the offense. So no, I think that Tony Pollard's ADP is a little bit weird. They said, slot receiver, this and that. He ran 10% of his routes from the slot last year. He only ran 11 routes per game last year. I just don't see it.
People do quite literally, not like the meme, do forget that he already was operating in the slot a little bit. And or it's not like it's like super new. And yeah, I mean, Jerry Jones talks about Ezekiel Elliott like he's like his son. And but I don't know if Zeke does what he did last year again, because I don't think they could keep that up for 17 games. I think they actually would have to pull the plug.
You would really think. It's so frustrating as anyone who wants to see like efficient, sensible football, it goes insane watching the Cowboys operate the way they do.
So Pollard's ADP again, an underdog, which is kind of like, like the psycho group. We're talking about like our Karains or Kyles out there, kind of like inflating things. And he's RB29. That's actually fairly reasonable, I feel like, for Pollard. Or do you think that's a little too high?
Yeah, I guess
he was basically the RB29 just by feel last year.
Right.
I'm sure he was by points.
It's not like horrible.
I think there's actually some upside that's not even baked into that ADP, to be honest.
Yeah. And maybe Amari Cooper's absence opens up enough targets for him to be more involved as a pass catcher. I guess that would be the optimistic view. But I also think it depends on the kind of team that you're building. Can you wait on it? Can you draft a team where you can wait on Pollard, or are you going to have to use him as your RB2? I don't know.
That's true. You can't really wait on him. That is a good point. I do think that he has some untapped upside. I mean, I don't see any reason this guy can't get to 50 receptions. Like he kind of like screams out 50 catch back Tony Pollard. And I think he needs to add 11 receptions to last year's total. I think that's pretty doable.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Tony Pollard, I would say there's actually a little bit of light at the end of there's more juice to wring out of that orange, basically.
I have a stat real quick just to show you the discrepancy, and I'm not the first one to do this, I understand, but in 2021, Tony Pollard had the fifth highest rush yards over expected per attempt. Did you catch that?
I did. It actually makes sense too, despite being like sounding like you're reading like the subhead on some government committee report that was worked on for 5 years and meant to sound as anodyne as possible.
Right. That comes straight from the January 6th commission. And Ezekiel Elliott, meanwhile, was, among the least efficient in this rush yards over expected. He was down in the in the David Montgomery range, and I'm sorry to report that to you.
Yikes.
But yeah, I mean, you know, Pollard deserves a chance. I think I can speak for all fantasy managers when I say that.
Now, speaking of congressional committees, by the way, we have NBC, we have finally gotten the labor subcommittee to take a look at your employment status, and bipartisan, both Republicans and Democrats have promised to investigate and get to the bottom of how you remain employed and how our lawyers have not been able to crack the code.
We'll see about after the midterms how that
goes. And okay. Yeah, true. And they've been told you cannot wear shorts to Congress, by the way.
Wow.
You're wearing a short suit today. We were informed before the show.
I am. I don't know if folks can see this or whatever, but I am wearing my Pride suit jacket and the shorts that go along with it.
It's very sharp, but you'll be loaded into the paddy wagon if you show up in Congress wearing short suits. Yeah, what can you do? Never owned. We're getting close to welcoming in Lauren. We're just going to skip Terry McLaurin talk about. He's not going to get traded. I mean, it's kind of nothing to talk about. So we're just going to skip that one. But real quick, elsewhere in the NFC, Saquon Barkley has apparently graduated from lining up as a mere pass catcher, Denny, to weapon status. He is now becoming an offensive weapon. In the words of beat reporter Ralph Vacchiano, I can't pronounce your last name, Ralph. I've been citing you for years, and I just have no idea how to say V-A-C-C-H-I-A-N-O.
Vacchiano.
I think it's Vacchiano. But Ralph says, when the huddle breaks at Giants practice, there's no telling which direction Saquon Barkley will be headed anymore. One play, he's a running back. The next, he's a slot receiver. Then he will split out wide or maybe go in motion from wherever he starts. Denny, how excited should we be this time? Should we let ourselves get excited this time, basically, on Saquon? Does this time it count?
Yes. I wanted that sentence to keep going. You know, sometimes he'll split out in the slot in the backfield. Sometimes he'll literally be the football.
Sometimes he's the franchise quarterback.
Right. You don't know. He's just a weapon. That's what they call Kadarius Toney.
They got a lot of weapons around that team. Weapon. You should look into that.
Weapon. He's dangerous. A weapon. I think it's good. I think it's good. I'm in on the Barkley resurgence. I know he got incredibly unlucky last year, having fully recovered from his 2020 knee injury. He then rolls his ankle, is never the same. He's stuck in this horrendous backward prehistoric Joe Judge offense, Jason Garrett offense. So yeah, I'm in as a third rounder. If I can start my draft with either two receivers or a receiver and a tight end, and then Barkley, I like it. I'm in.
Yeah, I mean, I think you should be fully in on the Barkley assignments, because I mean, it just makes, we know like his truly special trait as a running back is his pass catching ability. We know he's got a huge coaching upgrade. Brian Daboll, one of the most aggressive play callers in the league, I was willing to abandon the run, but you know, keep his running backs involved as pass catchers. Kind of like it all like clicks together. And Saquon's injury. Yeah, it wasn't about the ACL last year. It was about the fluke, I mean, ankle injury where he stepped on a dude between plays. And, you know, that tends to happen to certain kind of players, I will say. Like, it seems to find injury-prone type of guys. Like, where, like, Zeke Elliott would never just, like, step on a guy's foot.
Never.
And if he did, then he would just play through it for 2 years before finally admitting he can't walk and needs surgery. But, yeah, Saquon, it's an easy dot connecting situation, because it all just makes so much sense. And I think we can really, really buy the increased passing game usage and hopefully increased efficiency on early downs, Denny. So yeah, I sign off on any and all Saquon Barkley hype.
Yeah, he's, you know, when he was at full health, he was an excellent pass catcher who importantly commanded targets on the routes that he ran. You know, like, We can look into all these different scheme related issues and factors, but if a running back is not commanding, or anybody really, if a guy's not commanding targets on the routes he runs, then it's kind of it's kind of void, you know. But for him, you know, he has proven that ability. I think that's important.
We will be right back after this with Mr. Lawrence Jackson.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Just a reminder, if you don't have the NBC Sports Predictor app powered by PointsBet, to go download it now. The contests are free and easy to play, and you have a shot to win thousands by predicting what will happen in the NBA Finals, on the PGA Tour, and on the NASCAR circuit. We also have a special contest on Tuesday and Thursday called Battle of the Bets, where you can agree or disagree with our experts for a shot to collect some cash. We would now like to welcome in Mr. Lawrence Jackson, who I believe has been on Battle of the Bets. Lawrence, you're coming in for a series of pointless debates. I told Denny the idea was inspired by my recent Twitter poll of Sam Darnold versus Drew Lock, which Drew Lock won, by the way.
Wow.
But first, Lawrence, how are we doing? I know you're somehow a Tampa Bay Lightning fan, and I'm just going to ask you if you're excited for the Stanley Cup.
I roll with winners. I didn't know we were supposed to come dressed up like 90s WWE wrestlers. I would have dressed up like Papa Shango or something.
Sorry, you didn't get the email.
Dang, man.
Yeah. I don't know who that is, but Papa Shango sounds like someone of like, I tweeted a picture. I'm like, anybody else remember this guy? It would get like 1,000 retweets.
Do you know who the Godfather is?
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, he was like 6 different characters in wrestling.
I'm so glad. Can I just say, I'm so glad that Pat got his obligatory Jay Leno reference in here. I thought we were going to get through the show without it, but we got it. We got it, folks.
No, we got it. We nailed it. And by the way, so I was in Alabama last week at our magazine publisher with Mr. Ed Williams and Raymond Summerlin. And just to say, the Leno voice was a constant presence. Oh, anyone here with this? You guys following this?
We got to get Jay Leno on here with his son, Daniel Jones.
His son, Daniel Jones, who he's never once allowed to touch any of his classic cars because Jay just knows Daniel will wreck it immediately. And that you're a disappointment to this family, Daniel. We're sorry. But you'll never be as good as your father, Daniel, Jay Leno.
Wow.
Anyways, pointless debates here. A few of these would be a little more real, but like, one already, I don't know how to settle, and it's pointless because it's totally arbitrary, but Devontae Adams on a new team, Las Vegas Raiders, Tyreek Hill on a new team, Miami Dolphins, both like clear downgrades of their quarterbacks, like no offense to Derek Carr and Tua Tagovailoa. I know Lawrence likes himself some Tua, but I mean, they're leaving like all-time good situations for not bad situations, but just not as good as their previous spots. And Lawrence, I'll start with you. Who would you prioritize in drafts this summer, Devontae Adams or Tyreek Hill? Who do you think is a better shot of like maintaining their past production in their new home?
Devontae Adams. And like you said, it's coming from a guy who I'm on Tua hardcore. So, you know, I still got Devontae Adams as a top five fantasy wide receiver. At this point, Derek Carr's a, you know, he's a better quarterback than Tua. He's proven more. You know, he still got to get the kinks out down there in Miami. We got to see what's what. I mean, you got to see what happens in Las Vegas too. But you know, Devontae Adams has elite seasons under his belt with his good quarterback. So does Tyreek Hill. But Tua being less proven than Derek Carr, I would have to go with Devontae Adams, not by a large margin. And that's why, for me, it would be a pointless debate. Because it's not like I'll be mad if I have – it ain't like I'll be mad if I have Tyreek. And like you say, they both coming from, like, not good quarterbacks, great
– all-time great quarterbacks.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So It's like, yeah, I'll take Davante Adams, but if you give me Tyreek a couple of picks later, or the next round later, rather, I'm not going to cry about it.
So yeah, Denny, Lawrence, I feel like kind of like hinted at, like, I think Davante Adams' floor is, he's going to have resemble more of his past. We don't know if either one of them can reach their ceiling. I feel like Devontae's floor will still be pretty intact. We talked about the quarterbacks, but they're both going to, in theory, like very creative play callers in Josh McDaniels in Las Vegas and Mike McDaniel in Miami. I mean, does that factor into you all? How do you think Mike McDaniel's going to use Tyreek Hill? And again, who would you prioritize, Tyreek or Devontae?
Devontae by a little bit. I'll say this about the Tyreek thing I know they're paying him a tremendous amount of money, and he's the centerpiece of their offense in a lot of ways. But Jalen Waddle was so good and effective and productive on those short receptions and as the intermediate pass catcher in the Miami offense that I struggle to see like Tyreek Hill taking over that role and the deep role, right, for the Dolphins. So I just think that Tyreek is going to have like spiked weeks, of course, because he's the fastest guy in the NFL and a big play machine. I do think that the consistency could be a little bit maddening. Also, the fact that I think the Dolphins, McDaniel has said, we're going to operate similar to the 49ers. And if that's true, then we're talking about a lot of running and a lot of conservative play. So I think that that's also a knock on Tyreek.
That's actually a pretty interesting point. About the Dolphins and Tyreek and his potential underneath usage, because we knew he took on a lot more underneath usage with the Chiefs last year. I mean, some would say like frustratingly more. Like Tyreek needs more opportunities now, which Tyreek seemed very upset about, by the way. Recent comments was basically like they weren't letting me be me. So maybe he doesn't.
Which is that's weird.
That was weird.
Woody got 150 some targets.
Yeah, it was weird.
And like Hollywood Brown said the same thing.
Yeah, and they were giving him like room to like make play. In theory, Tyreek should be the kind of guy who could like take a slant and go to the house, like Odell Beckham in his prime. But yeah, I feel like Tyreek is going to be utilized more like his traditional downfield role. It could become like highly volatile. I mean, he was even in his best of Chiefs days, like his 1,500 yard seasons, he was volatile, but that was always with weak winning upside with Patrick. I feel like the floor could creep like a lot lower in Miami, where you could have some like two catch, like 28 yard type of games if none of the downfield bombs hit. And
you have those.
Yeah, I just feel like it's 3-for-3 for me too on Devontae, just because if we're talking about like the four like outcomes for Devontae and Tyreek, Devontae floor, Devontae ceiling, Tyreek floor, Tyreek ceiling, I have the most faith still in Devontae's floor. Like Davante Adams will get his floor. Like no matter what, I'll have like at least 1,200 yards, like 10 or 11 touchdowns. Any final thoughts, Lawrence, on the pointless debate, or should we move on to number two?
We can move on to number two.
It's getting more. Well, this one's a little less pointless than the other two, but I, for some reason, the other day was thinking like, would I rather have Michael Thomas or Allen Robinson, like two former fantasy greats returning from like very like weird seasons. In Michael Thomas's case, multiple seasons, but we have Allen Robinson out of the Matt Nagy desert. Finally, a much improved offensive situation with Matthew Stafford and Sean McVay. Or like, do we want to bet on Michael Thomas, and who the last time he was healthy literally set the all-time receptions record? And I don't even know why. I was just like thinking about these two the other day. Like, who would you prioritize? I'll start with you, Denny. Is there any daylight between Michael Thomas and Allen Robinson?
It's hard to like definitively talk about Michael Thomas's prospects because, he's still recovering. He's still hurt and he's not participating in this and that. And like, he'll be ready for training camp supposedly, but he's supposed to be ready for everything. You know, these mile markers come and go. Oh, he's ready. He's going to be ready for OTAs, mini camp, training camp. Oh yes, definitely week one. I have to see it. Like I have to see some progress in him coming back to the field and being at full health. I guess I'd have to go with Allen Robinson right now, because that number two role in the Rams offense is really valuable. And we saw that with OBJ last year. This can be, and was for the second half of last year, a condensed, concentrated Rams passing attack where it was either Cooper Kupp or OBJ, maybe a little bit of Van Jefferson down the field, but not much else. And I think Tyler Higbee managers could attest to that. And I think that Robinson can, you know, get back on track, and he's in an aggressive offense, an offense that throws the ball a lot in the red zone. And supposedly, according to Rams beat writers, he's supposed to take on kind of a primary red zone role with Cooper Kupp there. I don't know. I don't know if that's a realistic thing, but I'll go with Robinson over Thomas.
Lawrence, I feel like these are the kind of players a lot of times you like in drafts too. I feel like you like the target, sometimes the bounce back types, maybe like disrespected veterans. So I thought this would be a really interesting question for you. And where are you leaning with Michael Thomas and Allen Robinson?
Yeah. Well, both of these guys is actually, you know, disrespected veterans trying to get back on their feet. In fact, the only reason we really got these two, Allen Robinson and Michael Thomas, in the same sentence is because we don't know what's the deal with Michael Thomas. Tomorrow, if they say, you know, he's ready to go for training camp, then this is Michael Thomas by a landslide. So if I'm drafting, you know, in mid-August, I would hope there's some more clarity there because they have around the same ADP. If I'm drafting in mid-August, I'm going to just take Michael Thomas simply because, you know, where like his role on his specific team, it's hard to do that. But like if you just get a healthy Michael Thomas in August, like he's the man right there. Allen Robinson, he'll have value too, just like Denny said. What OBJ did was great, and I feel like Allen Robinson could do that or even better. But I'm thinking like more towards like when most drafts happen for redraft, I would say Michael Thomas. And I don't feel great about it, but I'm still saying it. And I don't even know if I'm I don't even know if I'm defending the disrespected veteran. I'm just taking him based on the season he had 8 years ago.
Yeah, it has been. He hasn't played since 2014. People forget that about Michael Thomas. He caught 173 passes from Drew Brees. And the Saints won the Super Bowl that year, I believe. Don't look it up.
Don't look it up.
No. Yeah, don't look it up. But, Lawrence just hit at it there. I mean, like, there's a lot of variables with both these guys, but there's no variable like Michael Thomas's health where it's just become one of the biggest wild cards in the entire NFL. And Allen Robinson, I just feel like there's a lot of variables there, but like there's more like his kind of variables are like the untapped upside type of variables, like going to a way better quarterback, going to a way better coach, like by far the best coach and quarterback he's ever had. A role that we saw instantly revive a player in a similar career situation last year in Odell Beckham. Like a quarterback that will actually like take those tight window shots to Allen Robinson. You know, he's a guy, he's not going to be separating like by huge margins at this point in his career, but he's always dominated one-on-one in those contested catch situations. And there's just so much I like his variables a lot more than Michael Thomas, who, you know, Sean Payton, his two like protectors are gone. Drew Brees and Sean Payton, the two guys that Michael Thomas made history with, they're gone. And it's been so long since we've seen him play football. And where I had him ranked higher, like all spring, Michael Thomas, this latest like health, we're like, they're basically saying, yeah, I mean, he's going to practice at some point, maybe.
Right.
I think I'm officially moving to prioritizing Allen Robinson in drafts.
Yeah, me too. I'm flipping. I'm with
you. Yeah, it's time to flip. We were before we were against him.
I will say that the addition of Chris Olave to the receivers room is probably significant for Thomas and for the team in general. I mean, you know, Chris Olave, like all he's ever done is command targets and produce when getting the targets. Michael Thomas has never really had much target competition, if any, really, in that New Orleans offense outside of Alvin Kamara.
No, it was always dudes like the three of us, like five. Denny's actually kind of taller than you expect. We're all like 5'9", 5'10", yeah, type dudes. And Mike Thomas, like, get out of the way. Like, I'm going to just get a 200 targets. And if you even look at me, I'll just punch you in practice.
Right. You know, like that kind of situation. There's also Jarvis Landry in the slot. And all Jarvis Landry's ever done is get 150 targets. Like, it's just his game. Oh, man, so
I keep forgetting about Jarvis
Landry. I mean, I don't know, man. I feel like the Michael Thomas ADP is a little bit of a time bomb.
It's a much more certain situation that, like, Allen Robinson going into something that's ready made. Mm-hmm. Michael Thomas ain't played with Jameis Winston. Sean Payton, he out. Uh-huh. Like you said, it was Tre'Quan Smith and whoever else as his, the receivers behind him. Yeah. It's just a lot of uncertainty right there. And, you know, Drew Brees would, you know, with the, you know, he got a limit on where he throws. So that worked out well for Michael Thomas. You know, they like to call him Slant Boy. I won't call him that, but that's what they did. I ain't going to call that man. But, you know, it fit perfect. You, Jameis Winston, you know, he's still risking it for the biscuit like he was with Bruce Arians. So it's just, I'm with y'all now, man. See, I could be convinced.
There you go.
I'm not stubborn. I can be convinced. I'm going right on over there to LA Rams with y'all.
That's what makes me a good fantasy manager.
Lawrence, you just really highlighted where, like, in theory, you think the guy who's on the team that he's always been on would have fewer question marks. But I think there are genuinely more question marks for Allen Robinson. It's like totally different brain trust in New Orleans. And
there's a time he didn't want to be on the team, yeah. He said. You know? Yeah. So, you know.
Boy, Jarvis Landry and Michael Thomas in the same receiver core, by the way. I mean, you were talking about, like, two, like, big personalities. Like, Jarvis Landry is one of the most intense players in the entire NFL. Like, those guys fighting for targets. There's, with, like, the rookie, a young first-round rookie. It's going to be interesting.
The analytics say there's a 100% chance Jarvis Landry fights Michael Thomas on the sideline in a regular season game.
Yeah, well, he's already gotten in a fight. What's is it Michael Gardner Johnson? What's the guy's
name? Yeah, that's the guy
Chauncey Gardner
Johnson. He fights CJ Gardner Johnson. I mean, he usually is fighting people on the other team, but he has fought Michael Thomas in the past. And
well, beat writer said that Jarvis Landry is the most intense player they've ever seen on a practice field.
Yeah, like, he will be. He's probably already fought CJ Gardner Johnson. Right. Maybe established dominance.
He more of a leader too than Michael Thomas. Like, not even close.
That's a good point, boy.
By the time Michael Thomas come back, everybody gonna be following Jarvis Landry lead.
Well, like, most of the Saints, I won't even know who he is. Like, I saw this guy on, like, NFL Network one time, like in a retrospective on the 2004 season, where Michael Thomas set the NFL single season receptions record. But yeah, they don't even know who he is. 48-year-old Michael Thomas, who has not played since 2006. Anyways,
don't look it up again.
We're getting into, like, the real bottom of the barrel here, but I feel like this is a worthy question too. There's no real fantasy relevance to this question, but would you rather have your team get Baker Mayfield or Jimmy Garoppolo? Lawrence, we'll start with you. It sounds like the Panthers are maybe finally getting close to acquiring Baker Mayfield. Would you rather have Baker Mayfield? If you had to choose, would you rather have Baker Mayfield or Jimmy Garoppolo for 2022?
You want to talk about tough. You want to talk about this is tough, because I think, you know, in between the ears, I'm going to pick Jimmy, because just because of that. The thing that Baker got going for him is he's younger. You know, he's played well. He's proven that he could play well. But he's also proven otherwise, too. And then there's, you know, how is he going to respond to the, you know, the criticism and what have you. You got Jimmy G, who, you know, they drafted Trey Lance, number 3 overall. He said, all right, cool. Let's just go to the NFC Championship again. You know, and he is nothing perfect about him, but I think he's still wanted as a starting quarterback in the league, and he should be. Same for Baker. So when it really come down to it, you know, Jimmy a little older, but I'll take Jimmy, knowing that, you know, he better in between the ears and he more handsome. So I'll take Jimmy G over Baker Mayfield.
That's for sure.
Hey, Baker's a little underrated for his handsomeness. He can grow
Mayfield. Put him next to Jimmy G, you can't do that.
You put pretty much anybody next to Jimmy G and they can't hold a candle. I mean, insanely good looking. I saw him on that Subway commercial, I'm like, come on, you can't be an elite athlete and the most handsome dude on earth. You know, pick one or the other. Stay in your lane.
Stop dithering, though.
Yeah,
you're filibustering, so you don't want to answer this extremely difficult question.
I'm gonna keep going for the next 37 minutes.
Jimmy G's looks.
All right, no, I'm taking Baker because here's the thing. Assuming that Baker can get back to his 2020 form, where he was a solid game manager type in the Cleveland offense, and you know, not having two torn labrums, however, I don't even know how that's possible, but
too many labrums were torn last year.
I would try to tear fewer labrums this year if I were him, so if he can get back to that 2020 form, I think that he's better. Because I think Jimmy Garoppolo is the ultimate system quarterback. And I mean, like, he can't do anything outside of the perfect passing system, which Kyle Shanahan installed the perfect passing system for a guy who can make accurate intermediate throws to Debo Samuel or George Kittle, and then they can do the rest. He can't do anything else. He's not that mobile. He can't throw downfield. He can't improvise. Jimmy Garoppolo can't do anything outside of what is given to him. So if he goes to Carolina, he will be a disaster. Jimmy Garoppolo, if he went to Carolina, would not start more than like six games, I guarantee you, because he can't function in an imperfect system. And I would call the Panthers offense imperfect. So I think it's Mayfield.
Yeah, a guy who struggled under Kyle Shanahan going to Ben McAdoo, who was kind of maybe underrated for his work in New York, but yikes. And I'm just going to go Baker just because I don't think there's much more of a step for Baker Mayfield to take, but I do feel like we probably have not seen Baker Mayfield's best football as an NFL player. Like, he has probably one better season in the tank than he had in 2020, like where he could be like a pretty useful game manager. Like whereas Jimmy G, man, like, yeah, if you're falling apart under Kyle Shanahan, like, I just don't really know.
I mean, look what happened every time the 49ers had to face negative game scripts and had to come back and had to get outside of their offensive comfort zone last year. Garoppolo, every time he dropped back, you're thinking, this is a pick six. This is a back-breaking pick six. And he almost threw, I don't know, four of those against the Packers in that game that they ended up winning. I don't know.
He was trying to get him that game, but then they won. But this is the thing about Jimmy. He might throw that pick six. he hand the ball off good.
He does.
You can't. Not that you can't end the handoff game is on 100. If he throw that pick six, that presser afterwards, gonna be cool. He like, you know, I played bad.
This, oh yeah,
this, that, whatever.
No,
they're gonna be blaming the fans. No. Being quiet. He gonna be telling my receiver got to get open. Yep.
He'll be blaming like Robbie Anderson's dad.
So basically, I'm going for the, you know, what's gonna help my mental health more rather, because you right, you're gonna get more on the field from Baker. That's not a question. Definitely more athletic, but I'm just going for what's gonna make me sleep better at night.
Garoppolo has always, you know, taken the brunt of.
He explains the hell out of a pick six.
He does, and injuries. Like when he got hurt last year, like he was breaking down in tears in his press conference. Like, that guy really cares. I think that he's a great.
Well, he will also actually sit when he's hurt. I think people complain like about he was like a little too willing to sit sometimes, which, you know, so, of course. Whereas like we've already established Baker like is like playing like on crutches and it's which, like. Just getting like hyena sacked by the Watt brothers while he's on crutches. And it's like, wow, this doesn't seem ideal.
It's an approach that cost him $25 million.
Yeah.
I give Baker his due, though. I mean, playing hurt is tough for any football player. And he has been quiet for the past few months. He ain't been saying nothing, which is not, that's not usual for him. So I can appreciate him just, you know, staying back, seeing what happens, and then, you know, maybe he'll get down there to the Panthers and make CMC that RB1 overall.
Yeah, he's finally put his phone on trade me mode, and where he's just not allowing to himself to tweet or text or anything, and it's the phone is on the new from Apple this summer, trade me mode, where it doesn't allow you to use your phone.
Yeah, I will say that there was a funny theory floated last week on the ESPN Plus where someone, I forget who the writer was, but they said, If Mayfield wants to be traded, he should go to minicamp and just show up and be like, hey guys, and the Browns will be so deeply uncomfortable that they will call anybody and be like, "We will listen. We'll eat the money. He's here. He's here in the facility with his teammates. No one likes him. We'll eat the $25 million. We're shipping them to you tomorrow.
Just start taking reps."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just like start really working on his chemistry with Harrison Bryant and get that ready to go for the season. The final and most pointless debate by far is, of course, the aforementioned Sam Darnold versus Drew Lock. And it might be a moot point soon because Sam Darnold might lose his job to Baker Mayfield. It was actually inspired, by the way, by Chris Sims' quarterback rankings, which are really interesting. Like, he's the class, like, Chris will have a lot of rankings. I don't know, Chris. Uh-huh. I feel like Chris Sims is kind of the ultimate, like, before the season, I'll have a rank that looks like really bad. And then after the season, it like ends up being right. Which is what happens when you follow your heart in rankings. So Chris always has really like thought-provoking quarterback rankings, but he had Sam Darnold ahead of Drew Lock, and I was like, I don't know, man. And I think I would prefer Drew Lock, but am I on an island with this? I feel like there's still like a little untapped upside with Drew Lock. I mean, even if it's like 1%, and there's none with Sam Darnold, but I don't know, Lawrence, what do you think?
Well, I gotta go first.
Yeah, sorry. No, Denny. Denny. No. No, I didn't
play. Man, you know, we've seen a lot more of Sam Darnold. We've seen him, a season now, and he done been benched. But then again, Drew Lock, we haven't seen as much of him, but that's because he keep losing starting jobs to Teddy Bridgewater, and he about to lose it to Geno. Yeah. So I'm picking Sam Darnold just because the fact that we even seen reports that Geno competing with him and is winning the competition, I'm picking Sam Darnold because Sam Darnold was at least decent enough for them not to immediately bring back Cam Newton, which that ain't saying nothing great either, but I'm going to just go with Sam Darnold, better arm talent. How much further did Sam Darnold have him? Did he have him over Drew Lock?
I think 4 or 5 spots. I think he had Drew Lock 40th, and he had Sam Darnold like 35th. So it wasn't like he had like Sam Darnold in the top 32 or anything like that.
I think Drew Lock is like probably the worst quarterback in the NFL. Like, I'm sorry. I know you want him to be a thing. Maybe
he's
a
the one Mizzou quarterback I've ever personally rooted for on the pros.
I mean, that guy is miserable as a thrower. Yeah. He seems like a great athlete, and
he's a good athlete.
He showed that again. Remember against Kansas City in week 18 last year, where he just busts out for two long touchdowns and he outruns everybody on the field. I was like, what is that? This guy should be playing tight end. But you know, I think we have a career move maybe. But yeah, I'll go with Darnold.
I just feel like that is true. The football we've seen from Drew Lock is inarguably worse than the football we've seen from Sam Darnold. But I feel like there's definitely no next step for Sam Darnold to take. Whereas in theory, you could argue maybe there is for Drew Lock, but yeah, there's not. There's not. And
not if you like head to head with Geno Smith right now.
No, that's a really
good like one. This was another show. We talked about it like, for DK Metcalf in fantasy, we would prefer Geno Smith because he ain't gonna run them long touchdowns, and he's probably more accurate.
Man, that's pretty bleak, but you don't want to be competing with Geno Smith in 2022.
He's definitely more accurate. So in that Week 18 game against Kansas City, Drew Lock was minus 9% in completion rate over expected, as like in line with Taylor Heineke. So even a good game was bad for him.
Yikes.
And I'll give Drew Lock this though. He is better than like me at quarterback. So I'll give that better than me.
He would be better. He would be by far the best quarterback on this podcast today, we think.
Easy. Almost definitely.
Can't say I would ever throw the ball directly to a linebacker like he loved to do at Mizzou. Where I'd probably just crumple and take a sack before I did that. He would be the best quarterback on this podcast, Drew Lock. So, Drew, we're all rooting for you up in Seattle. It sounds like some of you aren't, actually. I'm rooting for you up in Seattle, Drew. Best wishes. And that's all the time we have for today. good show. I feel very sweaty, as you should at the end of a podcast. I mean, you got the body heat going, you got the temperature going.
I'm drenched. I'm drenched in sweat. I'm dripping.
If you take Drew Locke over Sam Darnold, of course.
It's true. It's sweating bullets. Yeah, people don't realize what a sweaty activity podcast, TMI podcasting is, by the way. But kind of a hot endeavor, especially when it's hotter than the surface of the sun in St. Louis, Missouri.
I mean, look at I'm shiny, like I just worked out.
It's true. And,
glistening.
Yeah, I made a really bad. It was not a good idea for me to do the podcast from an aircraft carrier in the middle of the Caribbean Sea. And yeah, I'm just really hot. Really hot. But that is all the time we have for today. Thank you so much for listening. For Denny Carter, for Lawrence Jackson, I'm Patrick Daugherty. We'll be back later in the week with Mr. Matt Straub and a variety of special guests, maybe including me. Thanks for listening. Catch you guys later.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's Mix and Match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.